This is Bob Fetrakis with The Other Side of the News, brought to you by thefreepress.org. WCRS Community Radio 98.3 and 102.1.
Hi, this is Bob Fetrakis bringing you The Other Side of the News. You're listening to WCRS Community Radio 98.3, 102.1, and our sister eco-feminist station 94.1 WGRN. I'm here with Maria Schwart of the DSA, the National Director. And it's one of those good times in history. I'm thinking not since 1912 when Eugene Victor Debs got 6% of the vote, probably much higher than that, you've had so many public democratic socialists. This could be the end of so-called American exceptionalism. Socialism's no longer a dirty word.
Absolutely. I've never seen anything like this in my lifetime, and I was born far, far after 1912. So it really is, you know, the Bernie Sanders campaign was a game changer, and it's now on us to maintain the momentum. Democratic Socialists of America is a national organization that put a lot of support behind Bernie Sanders when he ran for president. But obviously there are millions of Americans that were electrified by his message because he really spoke the truth of people's lives. And he said there is an alternative. We don't have to live this way. And that alternative is democratic socialism. And whether or not you believe that what he described and the policy proposals he made were actually democratic socialist proposals, the fact that he punctured this this mirage of there is no alternative to capitalism is what I found to be truly game-changing. And he has galvanized people to look for an alternative. You know, we're an activist organization with community and campus and high school-based chapters across the country, and a lot of his supporters sort of independently have created chapters and formations around the country to continue his message and continue organizing. And, you know, he blew the lid off this bipartisan capitalist consensus that there isn't an alternative. But I think that it'll be very difficult for them to slam the lid back down. And it's upon us to organize and make sure that doesn't happen.
And, of course, the well-known Clinton triangulation, which they'll try to ignore the left, particularly the Democratic left, with concrete proposals routinely enacted in Europe. You're saying you don't think they can do this. They can keep us in the center with corporate capitalism and really a hawkish foreign policy?
Well, I certainly think that's what they're going to try to do. You know, right now, what we face is a neo-fascist campaign by Donald Trump. Luckily, it looks like he will lose. Thank goodness. And, you know, they'll be around after the election. I don't know if you or your listeners heard about what happened. I think it was in Kansas earlier this week. The FBI discovered a plot of white nationalist terrorists planning to bomb an immigrant housing complex where there were some 150 families living on November 9th. And clearly Trump is trying to get his supporters to intimidate voters at the polls, and there will be gerrymandering in a lot of swing states especially. But the truth of the matter is the danger at this point, because his numbers are really going down, is that there will be an organized right after the election, and Clinton will win with a lot of moderate Republican votes, and she will feel that she doesn't have to respond to the left. Now, if it is a wave election for the Democrats and we take back both houses of Congress, the Senate and the House, then And if we have a Clinton White House, I think there will be a tremendous pressure from the social movements that have risen up in the last few years. If you look at American history, the times when there were major changes enacted by the federal government is when the Democrats had the House, the Senate, and the White House, and there were social movements threatening disruption, actually enacting disruption in the streets. I don't know if it's going to be a wave election, and the reason is that Trump's campaign really capitalized on the dissatisfaction of people with their options, and working class people, particularly white working class people, don't feel the Democrats address their needs, and it's because many Democrats did not address their needs, certainly the neoliberal wing. And working class people that are not white are also dissatisfied. So you have tremendous numbers of people that aren't even voting or aren't consider themselves independent. They can't get up their energy and their enthusiasm for Clinton. So it's difficult to know what's going to happen after this election. But what is so exciting about Sanders is there are people that are very progressive, but they're going to demand a little bit more than they have in the past, and they're a little bit more organized. So it should be a very interesting time, and we're excited to be organizing in this period.
And I'm speaking with the DSA National Director, Maria Schwartz, regarding democratic socialism. From your own experience, I'm a self-professed democratic socialist, was in the Human Rights Party in Michigan, was in the Democratic Socialist Caucus in Michigan before I came down here, and ran as a Democratic Socialist in 1992. Let me just say there wasn't a huge positive reception among young people in that period. So how did you become a Democratic Socialist, and what the hell happened out there that caused this massive new wave of millennials to not care?
Right. So I became a Democratic Socialist. Well, so I was raised in a liberal family. I'm from Oregon. I was not a red diaper baby. My parents were not in the Communist Party. They weren't socialists, but they were liberal. I had a lot of union members in my immediate and extended family. And I'm biracial. I'm a woman. I could see the world was not fair. And, you know, I experienced my parents yelling at the TV about politics. And so I had this idea that we need to work together to stand up to the man. But I wasn't a socialist. I became a feminist activist, and I went to college. And one day I saw an event advertised called What is Socialist Feminism? And I had been dissatisfied with the feminism that, you know, my own chapter that I was a leader in was carrying out. And so
sort of traditional liberal.
Yeah, it was
feminism.
Clinton kind of feminism.
Yes.
You know, the Sheryl Sandberg lean in individualistic, you know, keep abortion legal, but if you can't afford it, too bad, you know, or you're an afterthought kind of feminism. And so it was great, but it wasn't enough. And I was intrigued. I went to this event. And I understood how the patriarchal system works, but then I heard about the capitalist system and how it interacts with patriarchy, and it was like a light bulb went off. I had a bit of an epiphany, and it did what Bernie Sanders has done for millions of people. It suddenly helped me understand all of these things I had experienced in my life, and it all made sense, and there was a language to talk about it, a way to conceive of how all these decisions were made without my input, and yet they structured my life. So I became a Democratic Socialist. I got involved. The value of organization is a perfect example because there was a young Democratic Socialist chapter at my school. I joined. I eventually became a national leader in the Young Democratic Socialists. By then, I graduated college. I went on to be a union organizer. I stayed involved in DSA.
And which union did you organize for?
Service Employees International Union, SEIU.
You.
For
which has
gosh,
a longstanding relation
years.
With the Democratic left.
Yes,
very
exactly.
Progressive union.
Yes. And yeah, and so that's, you know, that is, you know, I took a class analysis into that work, and being a union, I think it's very important to have socialist politics to be an effective union organizer, to say the least.
Considering
that's how I got
involved. Pretty much built the unions in America.
Exactly. Now, what I... what I experienced was something that I think a lot of millennials experienced, although I'm, you know, at the older end of the millennial scale, you could say, which is that I did not really live through the Cold War, and neither have they, certainly. And, you know, when I said that major social changes were enacted primarily at the federal level in the mid-30s and the mid-60s, people younger than me have never experienced that. So you see in mm-hmm. Occupy Wall Street their desire for an alternative that's, you know, Occupy in many places tried to create this prefigurative, horizontal society. And that is partly because they don't believe the federal government is interested in certainly or is capable of responding to popular protest demands. And that's why they didn't want to make demands on the state. So the kind of upsurge that you've seen recently is because young people, aren't afraid of socialism. They didn't live through the Cold War. They definitely want an alternative. And the other thing to understand is that young people today are living in tremendous precarity. Those that are lucky enough to go to college are saddled with massive student debt, significantly more than prior generations, because capitalism really individualizes debt and puts the burden on the individual and has cut funding for public institutions of higher education. For those that can't go to college or those that graduate, there aren't very many jobs, and what jobs do exist are low wage and part-time. And they're really, meanwhile, social programs and the social safety net has also been cut. Young families can barely make it because between the cost of rent and the exorbitant cost of childcare and the kind of wages that most employers will pay, they cannot survive. So there is this tremendous pent-up anger. And Bernie didn't go out with complicated language to explain people's oppression. He spoke to what they were feeling every day in language that they could understand. And he spoke a truth that few people are willing to speak. So it really appealed to people. I genuinely believe that he put millions of people through the same kind of transformative experience, politicizing experience that I had to make sense of my own life. And that, you can't undo that. Some of those people won't stay involved in politics because being a political activist involves, being involved day in and out, maybe not constantly, but, having certain habits of engagement in the public sphere. So some of them will drift a little bit. But that's why we have DSA, and that's why all these Bernie groups are forming new institutions, and why other groups on the left and the progressive movement are trying to keep people engaged, because all of these new people have been awakened and, we didn't win. And a lot of people thought we would win, and a lot of people will lose hope. But some people will want to keep fighting, and we need to be organized to keep them fighting.
It's my opinion, had the DNC not intervened in an absolutely unfair manner, Sanders would have won.
Hmm.
So you've got some people out there, but it seems like many of these movements and this movement, like many of them, have, there's an inside-out strategy. Some people, the vast majority, will probably stay in the Democratic Party, but it doesn't look like there'd be permanent change unless they actually run for office, central committees, get nominated to the executive committees, and actually push a progressive agenda, which may be more difficult in some ways than simply backing Sanders.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, Sanders was somewhat of a unique phenomenon. And changing an institution is a lot of work. and that's why in DSA we actually do have an inside-outside strategy. Our ultimate goal is to build the socialist base. And what I mean by base building is expanding, not trying to organize the people that already consider themselves socialists, but rather to increase the number of people that do consider themselves socialists and are organized mm-hmm. in a mechanism, and that would be our organization or other left-wing organizations, to actually collectively work and exert demands on the state, et cetera, other decision makers. So we actually are really working to train our chapters in being able to talk to ordinary people in the way Sanders did, and, you know, canvas, door knock, basically, meet people where they're at, talk to people that aren't traditional activists, and really, because people, Sanders showed that people are hungry, you just have to reach them and show them how to get involved. So we really believe that you need to build a base, and our goal is to have an independent political formation at some point. And frankly, it varies from community to community, whether it makes sense to try to do something as a progressive Democrat, as an independent, as a Green. And we also need to
Or states with fusion that you can
Working Families Party.
Oh, well, we better do a quick ID here. I'm here with Maria Schwartz, the National Director of the Democratic Socialist of America. You're listening to 98.3 FM, 102.1 WCRS, and 94.1 WGRN. So you were saying before the ID.
So every community is different, and frankly, the nature of both independent parties and the Democratic Party is different in different communities. So, you know, we see our first goal as to build a socialist base. Sanders spoke about that when he said we need a politicized and independent grassroots. And we want to build that, and we want to be very strategic about it. But we also want to break down the divisions which exist between direct action-oriented folks and electorally-oriented folks and folks that just do political education. There are a lot of pieces to building a powerful movement, and in many communities, they're really divided from each other. So, and different kind of single-issue groups are divided. So we want to help connect people and build a more coordinated and strategic and aggressive left. And within that, build the democratic socialist strain. Because if you don't have an analysis of how the system works, then you can't really have an effective strategy to change it. So that's, you know, we think we both have a long-term vision and a short-term plan to build the base and move down the road towards that vision.
All right. And what are you working on nationally at this point that will move you down the road?
So as an organization, there are a couple things. We've expanded our racial justice capacity. And we are, the way we're structured is we're almost all volunteer run. We're a member-funded, member-run organization, so we have very little staff. We have an anti-racism working group, which brings a very strong, it really brings a an analysis of racism to being central with our analysis of capitalism. And so we're working to help all of our chapters develop political education programming around that and to develop stronger organizing around that. Because, frankly, I don't believe that Sanders would have won if the DNC hadn't done all these shenanigans. I think, now, for example, in South Carolina, Sanders didn't have the whole black vote. Now, if he had actually had more mainstream media coverage, he may have had higher rates of voters from African Americans. But he didn't develop the relationships with organizers in those communities soon enough. And I recognize the reality that the Clintons had relationships with a lot of institutions in the black community in South Carolina, so it's not cut and dry. But I think Sanders made some mistakes. And I think the white left needs to learn lessons from that without falling into the trap of completely falling into this guilty identity politics that the Clinton campaign exploited. You know, they took something that really was happening, which was sexism against the first viable candidate for president, and said that any criticism of her was sexist. Same thing with Obama when he became president. So we need to have a really nuanced understanding of the intersection of different systems of oppression like patriarchy, white supremacy, with capitalism. And we're helping our chapters think along those lines and develop a much stronger left in their own communities. And, you know, a line that I like to say all the time and is absolutely true is if you have a divided working class, you already have a defeated working class. So we need to be making sure that we're working with radical organizations and communities of color, particularly the ones rooted in poor or working class communities, and building a left that actually has an analysis that makes an understanding of racism and how it operates really central. Because if we don't do that, we're definitely not going to win. So that's one thing, is we've really expanded our capacity to racial justice work, and we've endorsed the Vision for Black Lives, which is a policy platform of the Movement for Black Lives. The other thing is we're developing a rapid response network, which is with each of our chapters, to develop the capacity to do two things. How to respond, have an infrastructure to respond if there's a hate crime or a white supremacist speaker in their community, or if something, if something starts happening, as well as the capacity to respond to a national alerts around various issues, but particularly when we want to make an ideological intervention against neoliberal ideology. So, and concrete activist response. So, for example.
And by that, of course, we mean free trade and
Well, funny you say that because our next protest is going to be about the TPP. We participated in an Indigenous Peoples Day action against the Dakota Access Pipeline. Mm-hmm. We are part of the People Summit Network, which is a national network of folks that have a radical analysis, are not ready to capitulate to the Clinton campaign, and want to stand up to her and make sure she doesn't have a honeymoon. And, our next action is going to be around the TPP in November. So we are developing the capacity for our chapters to coordinate nationally in response to these national campaigns, not only in their communities with direct action or, visibility actions, lobbying actions, et cetera, but also to, what's the word I'm looking for, to promote that message online. Really. So social media is a huge way that young people communicate. Although I don't know if you saw earlier today, Twitter was down, was taken down a couple times. Oh. Yeah, by cyber hackers. I don't know the terminology, but, our infrastructure for protest is quite fragile. But we really want to be able to get the word out about, and when I say we're making an ideological intervention, I mean we're in the streets fighting with this message and organizing people to participate and go through protest and become radicalized in that process, learn their own power, and learn what we're up against, but also take that message online, because a lot of people, particularly people that are isolated, actually depend on seeing what's going on in social media because they can't trust the mainstream media. So we really want to make sure that our messaging is online in addition to in the streets. So our rapid response network will allow us to sort of have a feedback loop where we're continually amplifying the message about what's going on in the streets.
You're talking to Maria Schwart, the National Director of the Democratic Socialist of America. And all of this, of course, is compounded because of right-wing populism and nationalism. And on some of these issues, like NAFTA, at least the initial rhetoric, but not who's at fault, sounds the same from Donald Trump. One of the worst deals ever, or the worst deal ever. How does that pose challenges to you organizing people that have an impulse to go in that direction? And obviously the real problem is the ethnocentrism, the blaming of people in Mexico who really more than anything else were far more victimized by NAFTA than the American workers.
Yeah, it's striking. After the last debate, not the most recent one, but the one before that, I watched Trump's first speech, or I caught part of it. And he, it was like a hard anti-Semitic speech talking about the international conspiracy to control the global economy. But at the same time, he was striking all these chords that Sanders had mentioned. Because, it is true that Wall Street regulates Congress, not the other way around. The economy is rigged. So Trump is, I like to think of him as promising social democracy for white people, but really he's just throwing, the sheet over everyone's eyes. Like his, obviously what he, his politics are not, not our politics. But he really speaks to the fact that, like I said, this bipartisan capitalist consensus, which for the last 40 years has been destroying the economy, disciplining the American working class to accept the terrible living standards that there are in most of the rest of the world, except for social democratic countries, is their response and what they've done to the American working class is why Trump was so popular. And, you know, when you see Clinton or her surrogates talking about how many jobs they've created, it was like the VP debate when Pence said, you know, people in Scranton aren't feeling that. And that is true. Trump is popular because American working people are hurting. And, you know, when you hear America's already great, I got to say, like, a lot of people don't feel that way. A lot of people are really suffering. But on the other hand, it's very important to point out that Trump's base is actually not the poorest of the poor and even working class people. His supporters are actually higher income than Clinton or Sanders supporters. They're more comfortable and they're afraid of losing what they have. And, you know, it's our job as socialists to organize people that have a shared economic interest to not attack the immigrants, but instead attack the Trumps and attack Wall Street and the finance industry. And that's why Bernie was such a danger, of course. But in some ways, Trump and Bernie both reflect the dysfunction, or you could say the dysfunction of American politics for working people, or you could call it, you know, American politics for the wealthy and elites, functioning perfectly for them and not for anyone else. So we have a very important job right now.
And in many ways, this is the delayed reaction to the largest economic recession and downturn since the Great Depression. With that in mind, there's a meme that goes around the internet that says, and with Barack Obama as president proved to be true, the Democratic Party is the place that social movements go to die. Many people predicted social activism that never really emerged, and also thought in many ways, you know, Barack Obama was a peace candidate. And we ended up, you know, being in 9 or 10 new countries. How do we stop that from happening with Hillary Clinton?
Well, I think there's a real danger because we're actually in a period of capitalism where there will be constant boom and bust. We're just going to go back and forth and back and forth. We're in a new phase. So we're going to keep getting chances. Really, the only thing that's going to change is if we organize independently. And like I said before, you know, it in some communities, supporting a really progressive Democrat will make sense. In others, it might be a Green or an independent.
Take over the local party.
Right. But that all of that requires building a base that is politically mm-hmm. conscious. And that's obviously why I think everyone should join DSA, because we are open socialists. We do believe in changing the debate, creating space for alternatives to capitalism. It will be difficult to keep people mobilized with a Clinton presidency. On the other hand, you have the Fight for 15. You know, you have Black Lives Matter. You have all these social movements. If we indeed have a wave election, I think it'll be difficult for Clinton to not make some policy concessions to the mass movements. If we don't have a wave election, it'll be much easier for her to blame a Republican House.
And how do
we have
people,
to organize.
Right. And so, again, we can't mourn, but we're going to be out there organizing. How can they get a hold of DSA, Maria?
So our national website is DSAUSA, one word, .org. So DSAUSA.org. And in Columbus, it's DSAColumbus.org. We are a membership organization. We'd love for people to join, but we also need people to get active. So hopefully both.
All right. Thanks a lot, Maria Sparks, the National Director of the Democratic Socialist of America.
Thank you.